Good evening. Let me begin by reading a passage from Jeremiah 29. The context for this passage, it's the year 586 BC, and the Babylonians have captured Jerusalem. A number of Israelites have been exiled in Babylon. And the question on their minds is, how should we then live? Obviously, in a foreign land, with no prospect of returning home soon, how should we live our days in Babylon? And God answers that question. And this is what He has to say in Jeremiah 29. Through the mouth of Jeremiah, his prophet, he said, "Thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, to all the exiles whom I have sent into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. Build houses and live in them. Plant gardens and eat their produce. Take wives and have sons and daughters. Take wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage, that they may bear sons and daughters. Multiply there and do not decrease, but seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile, and pray to the Lord on its behalf, for in its welfare you will find your welfare." So the exiles are ordered. They're commanded by God to make a home in Babylon. So they're living in foreign territory, and we find ourselves in Babylon 2.0. We are now living in Babylon. So the question the Israelites ask themselves, how should we then live, is the same question we should be asking ourselves. And that is, living in the digital revolution, how should we then live? How can we be sure that we're thinking about Christian or social media Christianly, or thinking biblically about social media? Well, that is the content of this course. And I have a video clip. So this is a clip from a documentary published by PBS. It's called Frontline Digital Nation. I recommend that families view this documentary and discuss it together. I'm showing you the conclusion. This is the back end of the documentary. It was published in 2010, and you'll find that it's interesting even now, watching this clip, that some of the technology is outdated. It's obsolete, even 2 years later. But this is how they conclude the documentary.
People talk about this distinction between a virtual world and the real world, and there's concern that there's an inability on the part of young people to separate the two. I actually think that distinction is a very adult idea, an idea that has come from a generation of people where virtual didn't exist. And it was something new that was then added to the real world. But kids have that ability to move kind of seamlessly between the digital and the real.
Where's your controller?
Katie Salen writes about the theory and design behind video games.
Who has a theory about why this controller?
She's so convinced of the value of these games for kids that she helped create a New York City public school organized around it.
This is not an ordinary school. It's something new. The school is all about how we learn through games.
Okay, so for the game, Michael.
Definitely adapted.
I don't know, it's bugging for a monitor.
It's a radical model, using gaming as a lens for the entire curriculum, from geography to physics.
I am a pair of forces that are equal and opposite. You have 1 minute.
Games get us an incredibly engaging learning experience. Often there's a comparison made between a kind of older culture of kids reading books and the ability to sit down and get through a 400-page novel and the fact that kids today are playing video games, which people think means they have attention deficit disorder, that they're not really doing things in a very deep way. But that actually isn't the case. When kids are playing games, they are engaged in a way that's incredibly similar to when they're engaged in reading a book. And that game world is equally rich, I would argue, to many novels. What it comes down to is, if you can't engage that kid in wanting to learn something, you really have a problem on your hands.
Not everyone agrees with him.
You see schools where they say, look, kids are different, they come in today different. We have to play with them, otherwise we lose them. We have to meet them on their own terms. It's complete hogwash. We've got to slow down and stop And schools are one of the few institutions we have in our society where you can have a sustained conversation about something without being bombarded and distracted by all these machines. We have to protect that.
It may be too early to know the answer. We grew up in a world anchored in pages you turn. Maybe there is something these kids are getting that we aren't sure how to value yet.
You know, there were people who complained when we moved from horses to cars. There were people who complained when we moved from letters to the telephone. And it's not that they're wrong totally, because things get lost. You might have less memory, we don't have as flowery writing, but we gain other things. And life moves on.
And as we move on, I wonder what we'll hold on to and what we'll end up leaving behind. Technology challenges us to assert our human values, which means that first of all, we have to figure out what they are. That's not so easy. Technology isn't good or bad, it's powerful, and it's complicated. Take advantage of what it can do, learn what it can do, but also ask what it's doing to us. We're going to slowly, slowly find our balance. But I think it's going to take time.
Did you see it?
Yeah, well, sometimes I feel more like I'm their student.
Digital technology continues to extend into every area of our lives. Yet the people developing these tools seem to be doing so with less regard for how we'll be affected in the future than how we might be influenced in the present. But when you stand back and just look a while, it becomes clear that people will take almost any technology and use it to express themselves.
I mean, a lot of these projects are trying to help people gain some perspective.
To find other people. To remake the world on their own terms.
So I guess that means you can still count me among the believers. I love the possibilities of a digital life. I love being able to experience the world through other people's eyes. I love being able to broadcast a story across the country from home in my underpants. I love being able to imagine almost any possible future and to do so with other people, millions of them, right alongside me. But most of all, I love being able to turn it off.
So whether or not you agree with his enthusiasm, or whether or not you have a Facebook or a Twitter account, or you have a cell phone and you constantly text, or you are an avid user of social media, or you have no idea what Facebook is, this is the world in which we live. There is no doubt about it. And hundreds of people have been writing books in the last few years in order to give us bearings, how we should live in a world like this. And among them are Christians. And one particular man named Tim Challies, who has a blog, has also written a book titled The Next Story. This is also a really helpful resource. And I've drawn much of tonight's content from this book. So I recommend reading it as a family and discussing it in order to determine how you as a family should navigate these waters of that have been dictated to us by social media. So this is how Tim Challies describes our world. And this is what he says. This is, the digital revolution is global, reaching the farthest corners of the earth. It affects the way we see, what we hear, how we interact with the world around us, and how we communicate with others. Swimming in this digital sea, we are caught up in a torrent of media, striving to stay afloat and make some headway against the rush of sounds, images, and words that seem intent on drowning us out. Some, like Rip Van Winkle, are just now waking up to this new reality, and they rub their eyes and wonder what has happened. Others have been born into it. They are digital natives who have never known a world apart from digital technology. And social media is making the headlines frequently these days. On a local level, If you've heard, there's such thing as cash mobs, similar to flash mobs. This is the product of social media. A number of patrons will swarm a small business and with the intent of buying products in order to serve as a boon or to support a particular business. And we just had our first cash mob in Roanoke in early February. On a national level, you may remember Captain Sully when he downed his airplane in the Hudson River. The first thing we heard from anyone was not from CNN, NBC. It was from a bystander who took a shot of the plane on her camera and uploaded it to Twitter. And then on a global level, you've probably heard of the revolutions in Middle East countries, including Libya, Egypt, Syria, Tunisia. All of these revolutions were sparked by social media, using Facebook, Twitter. So we find ourselves in a world shaped by social media, and your own experience can attest to the fact that we're swimming in it. And so, you know, our experience ranges from the good, the bad, and the ugly. A few anecdotes I've included to illustrate our own experience. A woman, while waiting in the checkout line, checks on updates from her friends and family, and she learns that her daughter at college has just earned an A on her recent biology exam. So she grabs a $10 gift certificate to Starbucks in order to send to her as a congratulatory gift. The good. The bad, perhaps young man leaves his church community in order to join a virtual spiritual community online. And maybe the ugly, dinner table back at home, there's a man, the father, on his cell phone, talking to business partners while the kids are on their own personal gaming systems. Everyone in their own personal world, right? So this is the kind of experience that we have on a regular daily basis. So then the question is, how should we as Christians react? What should our response be to a world now shaped by digital media? Turned it off. So, one response, turn it off, right? What Tim Challies says is strict separation. So, clearly, social media is the way of the world. We should separate ourselves from it, and we should remain unspotted from the corruption that comes with it. That's one response. Another response is what Tim Challies calls enthusiastic embrace. An unthinking and unreflecting embrace of technology. Clearly, this is the way of the future. And so the church risks becoming irrelevant if we don't embrace social media. And so it's inevitable. If you choose to separate yourself, then you go the way of the dinosaurs, and the world presses on without you. That's two of three options. The third, which I think we all ought to consider as, well, I'm recommending this option, and that is, Tim Challies calls it disciplined discernment. So, obviously, with social media, there can be benefits, there can be drawbacks. We obviously want to embrace these benefits, right? And there have been plenty, especially within the Christian world. Time magazine just published an article back in late 2011, one of the 10 newest and best ideas out there, New Calvinism. It made Time magazine. How was it promoted? Through social media. So obviously there are ways in which the church is influencing the world and benefited by social media. But also there's drawbacks, clear drawbacks. And some of these drawbacks even threaten what we would hold dear as Christians, the way that God has ordered the world. Social media proves a challenge. And so we need to be aware of those, even in our use of social media. So, of course, the question is, how should we think about social media as Christians? And To begin this conversation, we have to start with what we know. We start with what we know, and so that's where we're heading. Let me at this point say I am by no means a guru. In fact, I don't have a Facebook account. Well, that's not true. I have one. I haven't used it in years, and my wife set it up. The only thing I can say that makes me relevant is I have a Kindle. That's it. I am a dinosaur when it comes to social media. All I've done is read books. Now, obviously, that discounts me in a lot of ways. So the reason I say that, I'm interested in having a conversation. I teach for a living. My mode of teaching, my preferred mode, is not lecture. It's conversation. I do not have conclusions about how we as Christians should use social media. But I'm hoping that through conversation, especially towards the back end of this course, that we together develop what we think we ought to do with social media as Christians. So that's my hope. So I'm also encouraging you at this point, if you have anything to say, jump in there. I'm simply presenting things I've read and slim experience. So if you have other experience that you think is helpful for others in this group, feel free to offer it, by all means. So we're gonna start thinking about social media Christianly, if I can put it that way. And we're going to use the major turning points of biblical history in order to frame our discussion. So because genuine Christianity is, it's not less than personal salvation, but it's also more than that. It is more than that. It's a total worldview. In other words, through Christian, we see through a Christian lens, and we understand our world by it. And so, because that's the case, we can also frame our discussion about any idea, much less technology, using these categories: creation, fall, redemption, and restoration. That's how we're going to frame our discussion. How is that possible? Well, let's walk through it briefly. Thinking biblically about technology, we begin with creation. A woman named Nancy Piercy, she wrote a book called Total Truth. And in that book, she writes this. In Genesis, God gives what we might call the first job description: be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it. The first phrase, be fruitful and multiply, she says, means to develop the social world. Build families, churches, schools, cities, governments, laws. The second phrase, subdue the earth, means to harness the natural world. Plant crops, build bridges, design computers, compose music. So how is it relevant to our discussion of technology, social media? Because all things that God created are good. We can say that even about social media. It is a good in itself, right? So, obviously, all things that God made are good. However, all things are unfortunately corrupt. And so that brings us obviously to the fall. The fall and the curse are just as comprehensive or are far-reaching as the creation. So there's nothing untouched by the fall. And so we find that a sinless world, Tim Challey says, had no need of medicine, but a fallen world required the development of medical and health technologies to enable human survival and flourishing. A sinless world had no need of weapons, but a fallen world required the development of weapons, technologies for defense against animals and other human beings. So, like everything else, unfortunately, social media is unfortunately influenced by the curse as well. So, how should we go about using social media? That brings us to redemption. We as Christians would say it like this: while all things are created good, but are corrupt, technologies, their goodness or their badness is determined by the motive of the man or woman using it. So, an obvious illustration: nuclear power. Obviously, it can be used to provide electricity for a vast area of metropolitan cities, towns. And obviously the way it can also be used is it can devastate those same cities, right? If harnessed as a nuclear weapon. So we see that nuclear fission, it's a good thing in itself, thing created by God. However, unfortunately, due to the fall, it can be used in a way that is detrimental. Right? It is used in a bad way, in a sinful way, but can also be used in a good way. Right? We should think of all technologies this way, not just social media, right down to your pencil, the printing press, bookshelves, everything. Everything can be thought of this way. All technologies can be thought of as good things in themselves, touched by the curse, and used for good or bad, depending upon the motives of those who use them. So, creation, fall, redemption. We're using those categories in order to frame our understanding of social media itself. Now, we get to the hard part here. This is understanding technology itself. Before we talk specifically about social media, there's a man named Neil Postman. He is a media guru, and he has a few things to say about how technologies in general change society. In fact, he has five things that we should know about technological change. That's the title of the talk from which I drew these five ideas. We're going to walk through them a little slowly, and I'm going to provide some illustrations because some of them are a bit difficult to understand. Others walk in the park. The first fits that latter description. This is easy to understand. And that is all technologies, they introduce opportunities as well as risks. So as I illustrated with nuclear fission, obviously the opportunity is vast. Electricity can be provided to vast areas of society. However, obviously, the risk is it can be harnessed by bad people and devastating effects on cities, towns. Those same that would be electrified by the same technology. Also, the same medical technology used to operate on babies in the womb can be the same technology used to abort those same babies in the womb. And so obviously all technologies offer opportunities as well as risks. And the real sticky bit is typically technologies wear their benefits on their sleeves, but obviously they hide their risks deep in, right? So under their sleeves. So the internet. Think of the internet. What are the benefits of the internet in general? What are some clear benefits?
Information.
Research.
Research.
Vast benefits. How do you all use the internet?
News.
I'm sorry?
News.
News?
Research.
Maps. Yes. Directions.
Scholarship money.
Nice. Yeah. Right. So there are plenty of benefits to the internet, right? However, the risks. Are there any risks associated with the internet?
Mm-hmm. The pornography. A lot of bad stuff.
Pornography.
Misinformation.
To be sure. Yeah, think of Wikipedia. How does Wikipedia work? Obviously, the amateur is the man who writes the articles, right? Why does your mother tell you not to use Wikipedia in research?
Because anybody can use it.
Anybody can change the information found in Wikipedia. Why is that bad? Clearly, right? So. One risk that the internet provides is
Information is put out by amateurs, not by the experts any longer. And so everyone has a say. And this is one of the problems that we're going to discuss come week three, and that is how something that technology gurus call the democratization of knowledge. In other words, yeah, I'll break that one down. Everyone has the opportunity to add his own thoughts and opinions to any topic and post them on the internet, and they never go away. They're always there. Now, that can be extremely beneficial because everybody has a say in the conversation. Unfortunately, the conversation is so crowded. Is there anything being said? That's the concern. And we're occupied with information to such a degree that, unfortunately, we may not know anything because we know so much. So that's one problem, is internet promoting information over and above something that we as Christians would prize, and that is wisdom. That's one question that that's one problem that we're going to have to discuss as we consider how we should think and use social media as Christians. So clearly one way technology changes society, it both provides opportunities as well as risks, but those risks are well hidden while the benefits are clearly promoted. Idea two. Marshall McLuhan, not a believer and an intellectual and not afraid of talking over the heads of the people to whom he talks as well as writes. So he coined this phrase. It's the medium is the message. The medium is the message. What he means is this. What's most important about any technology is not the content. It's the thing itself. The thing itself changes the way that we view or perceive the content. So, let's think about TV. Obviously, as Christians, we often argue or debate about the benefits of TV primarily because of its content. So, whenever we're having this conversation as Christians, we are typically having a conversation about American Idol, its opportunities and risks, or about... I'm so lame. I have no idea what other... The Office. I know about The Office. Is that a good show or a bad show, right? These are typically the conversations that we're having. That's a bad show. These are the conversations that we have, but... The conversation that is rarely had among Christians is, what is the TV doing to us as a society? Not just the content, but what does the TV do to us? So, I don't know. What does the TV do to us?
It leads us.
It leads us? What do you mean by that?
In what is on there, it leads us as a society down tracks because of what it promotes and how it promotes it.
Okay.
It takes a culture and moves it.
It certainly has a significant influence on who we are and who we'll become. That's to be sure.
I just read a study from the era of black and white television. People from that era saw the major in black and white.
Yeah. 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 And now you're all dreaming in color, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I come from that era.
Soon enough, you'll all be dreaming in 3D. What else? What are some other ways that the TV itself...
A lot less people reading.
A lot less kids outside playing. Are those things bad?
Yes.
Or good? That's the question, right?
Can be bad.
Can be bad.
The abundance that could be bad.
Okay. So excessive use or excessive viewing. Mm-hmm. Good. Good.
Yeah, I mean, Facebook is fine in itself, but how much are you on there? I mean, has it captivated your every... I mean, has it just captivated you?
Mm-hmm.
Because you can spend a lot of time on there.
Yeah, that's true. You can, absolutely. And you can spend a lot of time reading books.
But if they're good books.
So if they're good books. Okay, I see. Yeah, that's true. That's true. What other ways does TV actually affect us as a society? Think of the TV in your living room or in your family room, if you have a TV. I would be talking to a very different cross-section of society if I were speaking to students, even my own class, much less people outside in a public school setting. So assuming you have a TV somewhere, or have seen one, how does that TV influence you as a family? Okay, all right. You're not studying the Bible as a family when instead you're watching the tech game.
It affects meals, too.
It affects meals? How so?
Instead of sitting around the table and having a conversation and eating together, you're sitting in the coffee table in front of the TV.
Good. Zap a few microwavables, pull out the TV trays, and we've got 3 hours of viewing before we all go to bed. Right? Okay. That's true.
It can be a real time waster.
Okay, it can be a time waster.
Get nothing accomplished.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you're filling your mind with things that aren't possible.
Okay. All right, any good things? The History Channel, right? Discovery? Yes. Think about this. Before the advent of the television, were families entertained together, or were they entertained individually? Okay. All right. So the radio. All right. So they would be entertained together listening to the radio. All right. It's true. What about reading books? If everyone is reading a book, are they being entertained together? Doing the same activity, aren't they? But are they having the same experience? No. They're not having the same experience. They could talk about their books later, maybe over the dinner table, but they're not having the same experience. What does TV bring? Common experience. That's a benefit. But clearly, what else does TV do? It also displaces the family, as has been mentioned. So the TV placed in the living room has, at times, displaced us as not only a society, but also as families. And so that's one way the medium is the message. Another way the medium is the message when thinking about TV. Think of news itself. You may not watch news. You may have no interest. I only developed the interest last year. How is news, those of you who watch it regularly, presented? How is news presented? What news makes the headlines?
Negative.
Okay. Bad news. Why do you think bad news makes the headlines?
People watch it.
So what's... Hit it.
In a deeper sense, it appeals to the flesh.
It does. It does appeal to the flesh. So how... How has the TV altered our understanding of news? What's valuable when we think of headlines? Bad stuff. What's entertaining, right? So the medium is the message. In other words, when thinking about TV, not only can TV displace us as a society or as a family, it can also change the way that we think about the content of television programming. For instance, news. We see news as a form of entertainment, not simply being informed about current events local and global. Now, I'm not interested in presenting social media as something that is altogether bad and we should avoid it. That's not my interest. Nor do I think it, even though I'm not up on the latest. So, don't assume that because I'm not up on the latest that I think it's something that we should avoid. It's just because I'm lame and boring. However, I think there are some benefits, but obviously we're going to be talking about some of the problems. So I want you to understand, especially those of you who are using social media more regularly than I am
or even more than most within the church or even in the room, I want you to understand, even though we're talking about, even though we're talking about the problems that social media presents, I don't want you to assume that therefore we ought to, as Christians, separate ourselves from it. I think that is a shallow and unreflective reaction to social media. And I think we should be reflective as a church. And that's what I'm encouraging. So, we'll be talking about problems. But obviously we should. We should be talking about problems in order to discern well how to use it. So that's the medium is the message. Okay, the medium is the message. It affects the way, and I'll put it this way. There are embedded in every technology, there are fundamental ideas or values. So that's another way we can articulate this idea. The medium is the message. So what's the fundamental value or idea embedded in TV? It's that things should be entertaining, right? And you noticed on the video how our students in this school that has introduced controversial curricula being educated by entertainment, right? They're being entertained, right? This is the means by which they are acquiring intelligence and education, gaming, right? So what I would suggest one reason why this is now the new fad in education, well, probably because TV has something to do with it, and that is we now value, because TV is so it's everywhere, from the trains. Did I say train station? The airport, the grocery store has TVs in it. Your own living rooms, of course. Yeah. Bathroom. You believe that there are bathroom TVs, right? So obviously, the TV has made entertainment a value, right? And I mean, I can attest to that as a teacher. Why is the Odyssey boring? It's because it's not entertaining like my video game back at home or the television I could be watching, right? So I would say one reason why that particular mode of education is now popular, because TV has something to do with it. Why? Because the medium is the message, right? Third, it's called technology is ecological. That's a big word. So we'll break it down too. Mid-20th century, 1950s or so, rabbits are imported to Australia. Now, when these rabbits are imported to Australia, it is not any longer Australia plus rabbits. It's a new Australia. Why? Because rabbits, who reproduce rather quickly, now they disrupt the food chain. They eat grasslands, which produces erosion. And now the face of Australia is different. Why? Because these rabbits have been introduced. So when I say technology is ecological, it's not simply just adding an iPad to your house or your life. It's not just about adding TV to your time after school, right? It changes the way that you live, the way that you think, and even who you are. And we'll get to that in just a minute. And so when we say technology is ecological, you can also think about it this way. A cup of water, we add one drop of red dye or even poison. It's not water and a drop of red dye or poison. Instead, the composition has been changed altogether. It's now red water. It's now poisoned water. Right? In the same way, Australia is not Australia plus rabbits. It's a different Australia. And so when we add a technology to our own lives, it's not just Bill and Facebook. It's Bill's a different guy. He's influenced by Facebook, right? So it's the consequences of technological change are always vast, and sometimes irreversible. So, if the consequences are irreversible, then obviously we should think about the technologies that we adopt and use on a regular basis. And one way we might do that is ask questions of our technology. Neil Postman, that media guru I mentioned earlier, he suggests while carefully considering our use of technology, we should ask these questions in order to examine what effects technology could have on us as human beings. And so he asked these four questions. Number one, what human trait, sense, or experience is enhanced by this new technology? Let's think car. What human trait or sense or experience is enhanced by the automobile? Mobility, right? And how do you usually get around? This one's not tough. Right? Yeah, I hate those questions. They're so easy, no one wants to answer them. Right. You walk, right? You walk. So, you might think the automobile is an extension of the foot, right? So obviously, it's a means of mobility. We can go a lot further places than we could if we were just simply walking by foot. It takes 6 months to watch the Appalachian Trail, but if you get in a car, it only takes you about 12 hours. Okay. The pencil, or let's think hammer. What's the extension of hammer? Hand, right? So obviously we can't do things with our hand as well as we could with a hammer. But what's interesting is, and you know the adage, the man with a hammer, to the man with a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right? Well, the same way, to the teenager with Facebook, everything looks like something to post, right? I need to update my page, right? You won't believe what I saw at the grocery store. Beans on sale, right? So obviously, when we say technology is ecological, we can see that it changes the way we are and behave, not just adding it to our lives. Second question we should ask is, what existing technology is made obsolete by this new one? So back to that automobile. What existing technology was made obsolete or insignificant once Mr. Ford introduced the automobile on the landscape of the United States? Who went out of business? Carriage makers. Horses. I actually think they enjoyed the break, right? Blacksmiths. They went out of business, right? We're going to get to that. But obviously, these things have effects on... They have... all technologies put something else out of business. So we need to be aware of that, right? Number three, what old abandoned technology does this technology resemble back to automobiles? What's the technology that automobiles resemble way back? Been mentioned. Carriages, right? So carriages are obviously... They look like automobiles, just... not powered by engines, instead powered by the horse, right? So then the question is, what intended opposite effects might this technology have? Are there any unintended negative consequences of automobiles? Like what? What's that? Pollution. Have you ever been to L.A.? I haven't, but I heard it's bad, right? So they even have pollution. They have pollution warnings. So days you shouldn't go outside. Why? Because automobile emissions. What else? Just pollution?
Accidents.
Yep. Clearly, more accidents, more deaths occur on the roads than would be had we persisted with carriages and horses, right? Maybe a few Band-Aids would be handed out. But certainly not the devastation due to cars, right? What else?
Pace of life.
Yeah, talk to us about that.
Well, I expect everything to get done fast.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and those of you who can drive, who's tempted to text while driving? None of us, right? But why? Because we want to get stuff done. What's the virtue these days? Since we have all of these servants working for us, from washing machines to dishwashers to computers, calculators, we should be more efficient. The virtue is be more efficient. One thing that's contributed to that virtue, or the idea that that's a virtue, cars. Because I live 18 miles away from my workplace. It takes me 30 minutes to get there. The only reason I can live where I live, because I drive an automobile. That would be impossible only 100 years ago. Right? It could never happen. Not only that, but your lives are shaped dramatically by the fact that there's an automobile. Just think of our own church. Everyone living in this church, or everyone who attends this church, lives in the four corners of Roanoke and beyond, right? We have folks coming all the way from Whitsville, Blacksburg, Christiansburg, Lynchburg. Why is that possible? Because the automobile, right? So even our spiritual community is dramatically affected by this one invention. Did Mr. Ford have that in mind, that he's going to fragment the community of the church by inventing this automobile, and he did that with an intention? Of course not. Of course not. But we need to anticipate the effects that our technologies can have on society. Continuing to talk about automobiles, idea number four, according to Mr. Postman, technology shifts power. So back to those risks and opportunities. Not everyone shares the drawbacks, and not everyone shares the paybacks. Think back to that blacksmith. He may have even bought an automobile, but guess what? He was buying that thing that would put him out of business. Right? So Mr. Ford clearly benefited from the invention of the automobile, and all of those who would then become part of his assembly line. Obviously, they benefited from it, because blacksmithing was an exclusive job. It was prized, and obviously he's not going out of business until something like this comes along. So obviously he joins those who are among the assembly line workers and earning probably a minimum wage when he was doing much better for himself before. So we have to understand that every single technology does not distribute its opportunities and risks evenly among members of society. There are those who lose and those who win. Last idea. Technology is biological. What does Postman mean? He means this, that technologies, whether they be books or computers, rewire your brains. Your brains physically change due to the use of the internet or the use of books. So, your brain is not your father's brain. It's very different, in fact. Because you are a digital native, you have been born into the digital revolution, you likely think differently than your father or your mother. And you probably noticed that.
You're not talking about the brain physically, you're talking about mentally.
I'm talking about the brain physically. The brain physically changes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the synapses in the brain are rewired depending upon the technologies used by those who use social media regularly or those who don't. Different brains. And one interesting a book written by a man named Nicholas Carr. The first chapter he published in The Atlantic, and it's called "Is Google Making Us Stupid?" It's brief and it's really good. And his book called The Shallows is another book about it, and his subtitle obviously explains the nature of the book, and that is what is the internet doing to our brains. Because we were told by neurologists that typically, well, they had assumed much later. Right? This is the 80s. According to research, our brains develop through adolescence, and then typically they stay the way they then were at that time. However, neuroscientists are actually finding that the brain is much more plastic than we first assumed. And so only after 30 days of regular use of social media, you'll find that the brain is totally different. And if you watch Frontline Digital Nation, there's also another, there's a segment related to that. Very, very interesting. So it shouldn't frighten us. In fact, it makes sense to us as Christians because, you know, as one of the psalmists wrote, we become what we worship. And it makes sense that we would literally become what we worship. In other words, our brains are shaped by what occupies our time and what concerns our hearts. Right. So we find that even the brain follows suit. So those are the five things that we should know, or Neil Postman says that we should know about technological change. We don't have the time today, but we're going to make the attempt next week to think about social media specifically using these ideas outlined on your handout. We're gonna define social media. Well, we can define it pretty quickly, and that is social media. And I've provided the definition in your handout. Social media includes all digital forms of interactive communication. That includes Blogger, Facebook, Flickr, Google, Second Life, Skype, Twitter, YouTube, Wikipedia, and the list goes on. Most applications with which you're familiar, I'm assuming. Yeah. Okay. You've heard these words, right? Okay. All right. So we're gonna work to understand social media using these ideas outlined by Postman come next week. But let me quickly, with the last minute of our time, let me map our way. Again, because genuine Christianity is what Francis Schaeffer called total truth. In other words, it is a comprehensive framework by which we understand reality. It's not just personal salvation. It's also the means by which we understand our world. So we're going to apply that framework, again, to our understanding of social media, and that's how we're going to break up the last 4 weeks of our course. And that is, next week we're talking creation. The question we're asking is, why was social media created? And what is the problem it is designed to solve? Because obviously if we're going to know how well to use social media, then we have to know what it was intended to do. The week after, milepost 2, fall. So what new problems are introduced by social media? There's a long list, and we're going to talk about four that I think are most relevant for us as a church. Milepost 3, redemption. What can be done to fix these problems? So we're going to discuss methods to combat the potential dangers posed by social media. So, given the problems, what should we do? If we're going to use social media, how should we combat them as Christians? And then finally, we'll end up that last week with restoration. As Christians, how should we use social media? I'm suggesting not how should we avoid social media, rather how should we use it, right? And again, in a disciplined, discerning way, we should use social media. So we'll embrace the benefits and explore disciplined, discerning use of social media come week five. And it's 9:00. Thanks. Please feel free come next week to share concerns, thoughts. Thanks for the interaction. See you next week.